It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Lafondre looking to get close side of Font. Lafondre away from David. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello, welcome to the Elm Park Royals season review. Part one of three parts this year. It's been a busy season in the world of Reading FC. And we've got a lot to discuss. First part of this season review, I've been joined by Paul, Matt and James. How are we all doing this evening?
Yeah, good, thanks, Alex.
Splendid. Can't wait to talk about this depressing part. But yeah, I'm not bad.
Utterly joyful. I'll end it on a high on that.
Everyone's sarcasm is well noted there, because we're going to be talking about the first bit of the season on the pitch in this episode. If you are of a nervous disposition, you might want to skip ahead to the second episode at this point, because we're going to be talking about everything on the pitch from the first game of the season against Peterborough up until the middle of November against Shrewsbury away. And as you might remember, it wasn't the best time on the field for Reading FC. Paul, I'll start with you. Let's look at the very, very start of the season. We played against Peterborough at home. Can you name me the five players who are no longer at the football club who started that day for Reading FC? Oh,
God.
Actually, let's make it a group task between you, can you?
No, I'm going to have a guess here.
I think I'll name all five.
Yeah, Matt, I don't think your name's Paul. So, No, I want to go for Andy Carroll. I'm guessing he started.
That is correct.
Guinness Walker.
That is also correct.
Tom Holmes.
You got 3 out of 5.
I'm trying to think who else would have been there. In my brain, now I'm struggling. I'll pass it over to Mr. Lanzi, because he was eager.
You missed his head's fucking massive, I think. Oh, Tom McIntyre. Yeah.
Tom McIntyre. In my head, I thought he was injured at the beginning, but then he got injured a little bit after, didn't he?
About 5
yeah.
Yeah,
Dean Bouzanis was in goal.
There he was.
Dean Bouzanis is your final answer. Amazing, really. That Dean.
And there was also, there's also another one in there that's gone missing in action since.
And yes, Sam Hutchinson also did. I mean, I feel like Matt's got the lineup in front of him, if you remember that Sam Hutchinson played for Reading in that game.
He played pretty much all the games at the start of the season and then disappeared for the team. We started doing well again.
The biggest irony here is that if you ask Matt what happened in the WhatsApp chat yesterday, he has absolutely no idea at all. But ask him what the lineup was for Reading in August. He's like, bang, I've got it. I know all of them.
Well, we didn't play that badly in this game, James. From recollection, we actually matched Peterborough, I think, for a lot of this game. And it was people, I think, came away quite positive from this.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird goal, though, wasn't it? From memory, it was Mayton Clark, who's now at Coventry, but back on loan at Peterborough. It was like a weird header or like a volley from like right at the corner of the box. Or it's like on the byline, just looped over. From memory. I haven't watched it back, to be fair, so it might be talking rubbish, but I think that's what it was. We had a few chances, and I thought, you know what, if we can match the team that lost in the playoffs from the year before, and we, you know, can more than hold our own, then we'd be all right in this division. Little did I know how long we would have to wait for that turnaround to start. And obviously one of the things I remember most about that game is the sitting. The beginning of Sell Before We Die, with about 50 people clanging chairs for an hour and a half while I was trying to work after the game.
Yeah, we will discuss off-the-field bits and bobs, sort of, in this episode and the next episode. But we'll obviously have a full episode dedicated to off-the-field stuff. So we'll come back to Sell Before We Die in a bit more detail, I guess, on that episode. So check your podcast feeds for that. But yes, the sit-in was the first kind of, like, protest action, I guess, of Sell Before We Die. We had an away game following that, Paul, against Millwall. First game that we've won away for, what was it, 9 months, I think, in the cup. So, you know, the run did kind of continue in the league after this for a little while, a long while. Yeah, 4-0 against the Millwall team, which was quite, you know, full strength almost. And Reading kind of just put them to the sword completely.
Yeah, and also kind of an indication of their season until the last couple of weeks for Millwall, wasn't it? They've had a not a great campaign at all, but it was a real indication of all the youth in the team. And we saw players coming in like Tyler Bindon and all these kind of players. And there was a massive push, wasn't there, for them to be playing in the next few games. And was that a turning point? It took a while for it all to happen, but possibly a turning point for the whole of the season in some ways, long term, not immediately, but it kind of like when you look back with hindsight, which we're doing, it kind of feels like that.
Yeah, I think when you look back at hindsight, James, with that lineup, a lot of that team have gone on to play significant roles in the season, haven't they? Bindon, Abbey, Wing, even Vickers to an extent in the first half of the year, Air Batterman, Mbengue. Like, there's a lot of names there have gone on to play really, really significant portions of the season.
Yeah. No, it was a great game. I can still vividly remember kind of, you know, having a bet with my mate that I go with every week. And we text each other, obviously, because I left him to go into the press box and he went to the pub. And seeing the lineup come out and go, bloody hell, what have we let ourselves in for this evening? You know, we hadn't even recognised half the names, never mind expect a positive result. But I think Kelvin scored within about 2 minutes. And from then on, it was just pure domination. Clean sheet for Boyce Clark as well, which I think he needed after conceding, not having a great game on the last day of the previous season. I think it was kind of at that point in August, we thought if anyone was going to push button and become the number one, it was going to be him. Little did we know that sort of Pereira would come out of nowhere. We hadn't even signed him, I don't think, by the Millwall game. But yeah, it was sort of the beginning of the realisation that, you know what, these kids are probably ready. And, you know, I think the next couple of games after that, there was a real push. And yeah, the sort of old guard, even as early as August, you were losing the likes of Dean and Hutchinson from a regular basis, and they were becoming bit part players rather than the players that we thought were going to be the ones to lead us back up to the championship, stupidly.
Yeah, I mean, the next game we had was away against Port Vale. And this was kind of the last hurrah, really, Matt, for a number of these like senior players. It was the last time we saw Andy Carroll play in a Reading shirt. Tom Holmes obviously was then kind of ceremoniously bombed out of the squad completely, and Guinness Walker as well.
No, I didn't even see them play the last game because I wasn't there. Never made it.
In that regard, I'll be honest.
Never made it. I know, I was quite smug come, what was it, like 4:50 or so when the final whistle went. And yeah, I realised that I'd kind of saved a long trip up. But yeah, I mean, when you look back at it and you think like, I think people after the Peterborough game had some hope for the season. Everyone left that Peterborough game, felt quite happy, I think, even though we'd lost, it was they'd played well, competed with a good team and lost by quite a fortuitous goal. As James said, it was that looping header that was just a freak of a header, really. Good performance against Millwall, completely different team. But then you come crashing back down to earth with probably one of the worst performances we've seen from a Reading team in ages. And obviously you had the debacle of Carroll up front that game, just continuously going into Smith every single time and not winning any of the battles. It was just one of those games where you just looked, I think, at a lot of those players that were there and you just thought, like, do they actually want to be here? Are they up for the fight? And I think that then showed, obviously, when you had the dropping of, obviously, Guinness Walker, who's obviously no longer at the club, Andy Carroll, obviously no longer at the club. You know, Tom Holmes, as you said, was chucked out and has battled his way back in well and obviously got a very good move off the back of it. You could see a change, I think, happening at that point. And everyone following that Millwall game and then the Port Vale game, I think, you know, just wanted the kids in at that point, didn't they?
Can we just talk about the mood, though? in the atmosphere at that ground in that last 15 minutes or so at Port Vale. That was kind of like the beginning of the bad atmospheres at Reading games, wasn't it? Because that was not fun to be around at all. And I get why, totally. It was horrific. And still Andy Carroll, that's still one of the worst performances I've ever seen. I know I keep saying this, but it just still annoys me.
Paul, what do you think it was? Because it was two games into the season at that point. I know, because like I said, we had a good performance against Peterborough. Was it just the fact it was Port Vale and maybe a bit of an eye-opener for some people?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the reality check, isn't it? But I mean, as we see, as we go forward, Alex, that it's a kind of like the League One is, the standard is very low, but the problem is we were beaten by that. And you can't argue with that when you're in that situation.
You combine that with the fact that obviously the continuation of the away form that we had for whatever it was, 9-10 months, where we couldn't win away, we couldn't score away, and then we turned up at Port Vale and they basically just dominated us after the first 13 minutes. We looked good for 13 minutes of the game and Carroll misses a penalty, and then after that, the game is just gone.
I think you also got to remember that for this year, I don't think we as fans had a pre-season because sort of the whole issues rumbled on through from May. June and July are probably some of the worst I felt about Reading, and that we weren't even sure if we were going to have a season to come back to.
I mean, I think we lost every pre-season game, didn't we?
Lost all the pre-season, didn't have a manager till 3 or 4 weeks before the season started. We, every month we were missing wages and missing tax and having new wind-up petitions, and wages weren't being paid on time. And, you know, it felt like it never ended. It was basically two seasons of complete and utter misery with no real break or time to switch off and reset. So I think that anger level and the frustration and the fear, more than anything, probably never had a chance to get back to a level again. It was always high and ready at boiling point. And as we saw sort of by August and September, you know, people were ready to argue and fight, and people were, you know, panicking, and it led to some horrible scenes in certainly in away ends. And obviously that passion sort of boiled over. But yeah, I think mainly it's probably just got to come down to the fact that we were always, for so long over that summer, just still at 99% ready to bubble over at any point. And losing to Port Vale away gave us that chance to boil over for the first time, I think.
We had two back-to-back home games following that. Beat Cheltenham 1-0, followed by a 2-0 win against Stevenage. And I think looking back, both of these games, Paul, we didn't necessarily dominate either game hugely, but we didn't concede in either game. And I think that those two games really were the kind of the start of, the revolution, as it were. Maybe that's the wrong term for it, but it was definitely the start of like the kids coming in, playing a different team. It was the first league game for Lewis Wing. I think we actually started the Cheltenham game with exactly the same team as the game against Millwall, except for the fact that Button was in goal for Boyce Clark. It was pretty much Sellers saying, you know what, I'm done with the team who played against Port Vale. Experience be damned.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it was a kind of a mini revolution because we got rid of a lot of senior players. They weren't performing. We brought on players that are 10 years younger than them, sometimes even more than that. So I remember the Cheltenham game and thinking the atmosphere and just the first 15, 20 minutes or so when Vickers kind of scored, took a massive deflection. I remember thinking if we just continue like this, we could win this game quite easily. But, you know, it's not meant to be with Reading, that, isn't it? But Stevenage game, that was another one when obviously you could say we'd obviously massively helped by the red card. But if you don't go past him, Harvey Nibbs, you don't get that red card. So that's their own fault, isn't it? It's kind of like a Kelvin scored those two goals in that game, but it took him months and months to get another one in the league. He got plenty in the Pizza Cup, but it'd be interesting to see how he does next season. But just focusing on them, they were massive wins, weren't they, when you look back, and particularly the one against Cheltenham.
Yeah,
they were big wins, but not pretty wins. And I think, you know, like I say, I think it the warning signs were there, obviously, I think, for the games following that. And understandably, when we look back at it, right, you know, with what James says about pre-season, etc. But yeah, that I remember thinking that after that Peterborough game, it was more of a few, you know, after we've won. because it was, well, you couldn't have even dreamt of, I think, losing or thought about losing that game or not winning that game. They found a way to win, huffed and puffed. But yeah.
The month came to a close with an away game against Exeter, which I think was probably our first sellout of the season away from home. We've been backed really well away from home all season, and Exeter was, you know, a small ground, St. James's Park, we haven't played there for many, many years. And then obviously we've got two games against them this season away from home. This was, we can group a lot of these games coming up later on in the podcast together, but this was the first kind of episode, James, of Reading conceding at the death. And probably, like, I feel there's a point we can make later on about this, but probably not deserving to lose the game, but finding a way to lose the game.
Yeah, it was a frustrating one. I think they bossed the first half from memory, I think, and they scored much earlier on. I think we scored just before half time, and then sort of most of the second half was ours. We hit the post. I think it was in that phase of the season where Femi was missing everything that came his way, and people were getting frustrated, but you were willing the ball to go in. And I think he had a couple of one-on-ones that he just put wide or hit the post. And then, I think there's a long ball up the side and it falls to the edge of the box. And of course, we were in that run where everything that fell on the edge of the box, they hit and just somehow went in. And you were just like, well, how the hell is that going in? He could have that shot 99 times and wouldn't go in any other time. And it flew into the back of the net, almost took the net off, I think, from memory. And it was a beginning of a running theme for the next sort of few months. I don't think we played particularly bad. We've played a lot worse, and I think even in the run where we picked up more results in recent months, I think we probably played worse than what we played on that day. But you know, when your luck's out, and it certainly was for us until November sort of time.
And at this point, I mean, Paul, Exeter were actually, you know, pretty much top of the table. I think they were second after this game. It really did feel like we kind of ran into the bad luck, as it were, against teams who were on form just at the wrong point. Obviously, Port Vale lost their first game 7-0 against Barnsley, and then we lost there away from home. And then we went to Exeter, who started the season with three wins out of five and only one loss, and was second in the table at the end of August. So it felt like there was just bad timing every single time we played some of these teams for the first couple of months, that there was always like a reason as to not why we were losing, but we seemed to be coming up against teams who had the momentum, as it were. And then obviously that momentum translates into a little bit of luck, as James was saying.
Yeah, we was incredibly vulnerable though, just in so many ways. The whole club was in turmoil. No one can look back in that period and say anything was easy. There was so much uncertainty on and off the pitch, players, senior players not performing well. But the Exeter game, I just remember being sat there in my tent in Reading Festival thinking, I know what's coming here. I'm refreshing my phone. And bang, there it is. 2-1 defeat to Exeter. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm having a really great time. Yeah, let's get through this one. It's like, I can't remember who I was just about to go and see. Maybe Foles, someone will correct me. That was probably my Friday night. But it was a tough time. But there was tougher times to come. That is for certain. This was almost the good part of the season of this period of the podcast.
And of course, the main link, Matt, between the Exeter and Reading clubs is obviously Eamon Dolan. And they had a nice touch to him there with their programme and the memorial to him as well, and the tribute during the game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was a memorial, I think, before the game. You know, it was a really nice kind of heartwarming moment, massive, massive factor in both of the clubs. Eamon doesn't need, you know, the introduction, I think, for Reading fans or Exeter fans. It was just a really nice kind of heartwarming moment. But yeah, as Paul said, kind of on the pitch, it was in that period where everything was just starting to become inevitable, really, with Reading FC, and that jumped over to the Cambridge game, which I think was the first game which I went to. Exeter, I left, and like I was still in that feeling of going to away games and thinking, these away games, they're quite fun still. We've lost both, but they're fun. It felt like a cup tie and all of that. And I remember going away from Cambridge after we'd lost that late on with you, Alex, and I started feeling, yeah, this isn't fun anymore.
I think we actually had this discussion on the way out of the Abbey Stadium. And I think we walked past someone who said, oh, at least we still get to go to some new grounds this season, like in League One and stuff. And I was like, I really don't give a shit anymore about going to these grounds. We're going to lose week after week and it's going to get worse. Yeah. And again, this game, I feel like it mirrored the Exeter game almost, to be honest, Paul, because it was one on TV. It was a Monday night. We didn't play awfully against Cambridge. We didn't necessarily play especially well, but we missed a massive chance with, I think it was Harvey Nibbs actually, who missed a massive chance late on after we'd gone 1-0 down. Really should have scored. But of course, the goal for Cambridge came really late, 83rd minute. And it was just another kind of like kick in the teeth, as it were, away from home. You know, no goals scored still. Just couldn't find a way to basically pick up any kind of result away from home, despite the fact that we'd obviously beaten Millwall 4-0 away from home. It went in the cup and there was no pressure on it.
Yeah, Harvey Nibbs hits the bar. It kind of goes on the line, but it doesn't go over. And the worst thing about it was he semi-celebrates as if he scored. So he gave me, you know, it hasn't gone in, but your brain's saying, hang on, he's celebrating. So you're like, oh, where's the goal line technology? Oh, no, it's League One. Well, yeah, it's kind of like the realities of how that is. But yeah, no, this was just kind of so grim watching this on TV. Just the sheer quality of the football as well was this just was so bad. I remember Aziz had a good chance in the first half as well. This is like a period of play when he was really, really struggling as well. It comes into form later, but...
And he couldn't finish at all during this time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was taking a lot of abuse, wasn't he, Femi? There's absolutely no doubt on that during this period.
And I'll be honest, during this period, like during this game, when Nibbs misses that chance, and because of the way that he'd been kind of set up during this time, during the first month of the season, he often played at left wing. And after the Cambridge game, I thought, I really don't understand why we signed him, James. I didn't get it at all. I couldn't understand what he was meant to be there for. He didn't really cross much during that time. He couldn't finish. I just didn't get it at all. And obviously the big difference that we've seen later on in hindsight is the fact that, yes, he actually plays very well centrally behind the striker.
Well, yeah. Who'd have thought if you play a player in their best position that they play better? At the time, obviously, he had played at times for Cambridge out wide, so he still weren't. We weren't sort of as sure as we are now that he's very much a central player. But yeah, you know, there was quite a few signings at the time. Obviously, Smith was still injured, so we hadn't seen any of Smith by this point. Wing had just about recovered, I think, from a knock in pre-season, but he wasn't anywhere near his full fitness. And we were still muddling through and trying to work it all out. You know, let's face it, we were where we should have been really in mid-July. The fact that none of these players had signed by then and Ruben had only just got his feet under the table. We were still in our pre-season phase until the end of September, beginning of October, really. So as with everyone's friend hindsight, so you can kind of see why it didn't click now. But at the time we were all just, you know, angry and scared and frustrated and you know, the results weren't helping that.
To be honest, I don't think, and maybe this is me speaking out of turn here, I don't think the anger was really there necessarily during this point of the season when we were losing to Cambridge and Exeter. And I don't think people were necessarily that angry. I think they were maybe a little concerned that we weren't playing very well. But I don't think people were necessarily like raging and really annoyed.
It must have been there somewhat, though, because the very next game within a week, we throw loads of tennis balls on the pitch.
But so, I think there's
an underlying
that came in reaction to the kind of the news that we had during the international break when we had the 3-point deduction.
I didn't notice there was an international break between the two.
We had the 3-point deduction during the international break, and we ended up playing Bolton straight after it. We ended up with Bolton with the first kind of big tennis ball protest at home, Matt. And what inevitably happens when that tennis ball protest happens? Bolton go up the other end and score.
Yeah, this was the game where I think people, I think this point, everyone was still a bit unsure around protests, weren't they? And kind of some people weren't pushed over the edge. Some people had already been pushed over the edge months back. And you still had that kind of divide between fans, and you had all of this, oh, you shouldn't do this. But like you say, it was kind of inevitable the very first time that it happened. You know, I think it was Deion Charles, wasn't it, went up the other end and put one away in pretty good fashion,
literally seconds after as well. I think it was like
it was within minutes. Yeah, it was literally from their goal kick, from when the game was stopped. It couldn't have been, you know, kind of, I guess looking back on it, more of a comical fashion really. But the one thing that we did see from the team though in that game was something that we'd not seen for quite some time in a Reading team, and that was fight back. Because obviously they went 1-0 down. Bolton were a team that were charging at that point. Probably rode our luck a little bit in that game. Because I remember there was a chance in the first half as well. I think it was Victor Adebayeju.
A little bit.
It was a bit.
A double hat trick, I think, by half time.
Yeah. So we rode our luck in that game. But when you look at the team and you look at the age of it, the character they showed in that game to pull it back, again, it gave you that little carrot of hope. But what it did do was continue that very odd record that only Reading FC can have, I think, of winning every single game we've had after a points deduction.
Yeah, never. We haven't lost a game, have we? I think maybe we've drawn a couple, but the I remember that I was doing the podcast after this Bolton game, and I just remember gushing with praise about how good Bolton were, Paul, and how impressive they were, and the fact that we'd beaten them was really good, despite the fact that I don't think we necessarily, as Matt said, we did ride our luck, and I don't think we played that well. But it was kind of the emergence, really, of Charlie Savage, I think, in the league. It was the first time he'd really kind of got, you know, a big moment and scored a goal to bring us back. He scored a goal from outside the area with about 15 minutes to go, which kind of set us on a comeback. Because before that point, we weren't necessarily going to come back into that game.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic strike. I remember seeing Charlie Savage in a pre-season friendly and thinking there was a decent player there. He drifted in and out throughout the season, but in that Bolton game, he had a real massive impact. There's no doubt on that. And James is right. We definitely were lucky in that game. And Bolton showed that they have definitely got the measure of us. But we got the 3 points. Vickers, I'm still waiting for that. And I'm sure everyone else on this podcast is waiting for that moment when we get that 95th minute or that injury time goal. We keep on saying it, don't we, when we go to games. When are we going to get this moment? And we still haven't. And that is the latest one I think we've had. Was it 86 minutes?
86, yeah. I don't think that one counts, really. It's close, it's not quite it.
It was a good late turnaround, though. Like, you know, I think it was about 77 minutes, I think, was Savage's goal, or mid-70s. To turn it around.
Yeah, actually got a red card in the last minute as well. I didn't even remember that at all. Yeah, in the 94th minute. Yeah.
The one thing kind of which we've not really touched on yet, James, from the start of the season, is the fact that we weren't playing in a formation that people liked, and we weren't creating chances. And even in this game, really, like I said, it didn't look like we were going to come back and win that game. And it was a moment of magic from Savage, which kind of brought us back into the game. But that 4-2-2-2 was very widely disliked.
The dreaded 4-2-2-2.
And Savage were playing in the central two, and there just wasn't really a lot of love for it.
No, well, I don't think the players particularly liked it either, to be honest, because they didn't perform in it. Problem was we had wingers. Well, we have one winger anyway in Femi, and we were obviously trying to shoehorn him into that kind of either the second striker role, or he was the only winger. Therefore, everything when we went wide went via him. Because when you play 4-2-2, obviously the two behind the two strikers are supposed to be narrow to make a box with the two behind, and then the fullbacks are supposed to be providing the width, but the fullbacks weren't providing the width, and then we obviously had Femi, who was coming inside when his best position's out wide. We had Nibs, who didn't know what he was going to do. We didn't have two very good strikers at that point because there was still no Smith. And we had sort of Ballard drifting in and out, kind of showing bits of potential and sadly getting injured, obviously, before we could really see it. But we just didn't have the squad to make the formation work. And by this sort of point, by Bolton, it was clear to see for everyone that it just wasn't getting the best out of the players. But we, you know, continued persisting with it. And that was, you know, obviously the old famous, you know, doing everything however many times, expecting a different result. And we weren't getting a different result. We were either sort of losing or winning, luckily. So, yeah, you know, it was a frustrating one. But he was a young manager and obviously wanted to play his style of football, which he was giving every possibility to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to the Star fans forum really early on in the season. I can't remember when. It must have been late August or something. And the one thing that Sellers said is, we'll improve as the season goes on and the players kind of, you know, understand and we work together more. And I'll give him credit. Yes, we did. But this, you know, early in the season, we were not necessarily that good with this formation, especially, as you said, the players didn't like it. We didn't really create much and we looked really exposed so often. However, what wasn't lucky was the game after the Bolton game, James, with the away game down at Exeter City, which I think was our biggest win ever as a club, or second biggest win ever. I can't actually remember what the stat was exactly, but it was 9-0 either way. And not many people were, you know, not many people get to say that they saw their team win 9-0.
Yeah, exactly. There were 1,871 people that saw Reading win 9-0, which was just a nice kind of symmetry, 1871, that you would have expected on that evening. But yeah, I mean, we'd seen that young, inexperienced side demolish a full-strength Millwall team in the Carabao Cup, and unsurprisingly, when Exeter almost also play their under 16s, then our under 18s is better than their under 16s, and yeah, we demolished them, absolutely demolished them from start to finish. It was a true joy to have been there, and it's one I've got over Tim because BBC Berkshire sent somebody else and not him, so that's one that I've got over all of the other local media. Is the only other one that saw us win 9-0.
He's so ding. He is so ding, isn't he?
I have to admit, I had the day off this day and I remember thinking, I could go to Exeter, I guess. And I thought, do I really want to drive 3 hours down to Exeter to go and watch us play in an EFL trophy game? Nah, I can't really be bothered. So I didn't bother going. And then obviously we turn up and destroy them 9-0. I thought,
you'd miss the Exeter game in the league as well.
I had missed the extra game in the league. And yeah, it was just like, that was pretty typical, I have to say. So it was one which I don't think we'll see repeated anytime soon, put it that way. 9-0 win in any competition.
No.
I had to check my phone about five times when I was, because I was out in Dublin then. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it on my phone. It was the weirdest scoreline.
It's weird because it was only sort of, I think, two or three at half time. I think second half we just turned on the turbo. And what I loved was that obviously because they were so young and exuberant, rather than get to six and think, you know, well, let's be respectful and kind of keep it tight, we just thought, ah, sod it, we're better than these lot, and just kept scoring with every single attack that we had, even like tap-ins on the line, and the keeper would spill one and we'd just smash it into the net from like half a yard out and just like have it like that. And it was just
It was like one of those things where you're playing against a 4 or 5 year old brother who got on FIFA or something.
Yeah, no, it was very much.
Don't let up.
Yeah, it was the cup games, let's face it, at that sort of time that were keeping us going during that beginning of the season. Obviously, we had the big Swindon game when the whole of the Thames Valley were out, and we smashed them, smashed Arsenal, took Ipswich very, very close to penalties in the Carabao Cup. So, you know, it was. Cup games proved light relief for what was a pretty depressing spell in the league until Christmas.
Yeah, the funny thing is obviously we beat Bolton 2-1, we beat Exeter 9-0, and then I remember driving up to Blackpool the Saturday after the Exeter game thinking, oh, you know what, maybe there's a good chance we'll get a result here now, having just won the last two games. And we put in, I would suggest, what was the worst performance, maybe not the worst, one of the worst performances, probably top three, bottom three, I don't know how you want to describe it, of the season, because this was dreadful. 4-1 away at Blackpool. It was honestly shocking. Blackpool just took us to pieces. And this was the game where at the very end of the game, Sellers came over and basically started apologising to fans and saying that it wasn't good enough, and that they were going to work on things and improve things and change things. And I think this was the first time that fans started to revolt against the management and the players a bit more, despite the fact that we won the previous two, because it was really poor. It wasn't Angelo in the away end, but it was very disappointing.
Yeah, looking back on that period, we'd be liars if we said that the mood about Ruben Sellers was very mixed indeed. I think it was also a time when there was a lot of criticism from different places about him taking the players over to the end. You know, at home, obviously, it's 1871. He goes around the stadium, obviously, don't want to offend anyone there. But they also, in front of the away end, doing it after whatever the scoreline is. At the time, I didn't have any problem with it. And at the time now, I don't have any problem with it. I think it's just one of those things. Football's changed. The world has changed. Society has changed. But, yeah, that was a real nasty one, wasn't it? Because we were completely and utterly outplayed.
There was We just never do well at Blackpool. I feel like every time we go to Blackpool, we just get destroyed. Can't stand going to Blackpool. I know people love going to Blackpool, and I'm sure there's plenty of people out there listening who think Blackpool's a really good away day. It's really fun. It's a fun day out. But the football's always shit when you're watching Reading there. It just is.
And it is a dump of a place.
Yeah. Well,
it's not a nice place.
Well, let's not get into Matt Lansley's favourite places in the UK, because it won't take very long. What I was also going to say is it also reminds me of us where Zach Knight played for us there as well. And that is never a good memory. Never, ever a good memory about Blackpool. Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty horrific, that one. I think that was when the Brian McDermott second
era. I'm glad I don't remember this at all.
Yeah. Yeah,
I am glad I don't remember, because I didn't go to this one because I was on holiday. It was Reading 0, Burton 0.
Oh, honestly, that had nothing in it. That was a dreadful match.
That was the biggest turnout of tennis balls I've ever seen in my entire life. So that was the big one where it caught hold, and they just, every time the staff were getting close to taking them off, they just throw another 200 on just to make them clear it up. I mean, I think it was the first time that they took the players off. From memory, because it took so long for them to clear them up.
I think so, yeah. But what else can you remember from the game, James?
Nothing about the game at all. So yeah, let's move on
quickly to the bit which everybody was waiting to listen to and discuss. 5 defeats in a row.
Woo!
Yeah.
This has to be the worst month as a Reading fan, though. It's the worst this month I can remember.
There was one good moment in this October, and it was beating Swindon.
It's still not as bad as January 2021, though.
It is up there, I will say that.
Yeah.
It is rivaling January 2021.
Do you know what? We're not going to do on the worst month podcast, because that was just imagine that.
That is one for, you know, a time when things are doing much better. We can go back and do a worst month podcast.
Yeah, that's
worst
true.
Months.
Yeah, no, we could do it then. Yeah.
Started off with a midweek trip to Northampton away. Another sellout away end. And this was the introduction of the David Button anti-fan club with the founding member, Matt Lansley.
Go on, let him go. Let him loose.
Because three mistakes at Northampton and we lose 3-1.
I haven't watched these highlights back for quite some time. And it's actually amusing how bad these goals are. They were, and I remember being in that away end. I'd got back. I think I was away. I think I was on holiday for Blackpool, got back for the Burton game, snored myself to sleep, went to Northampton, given that it was a 6 a.m. flight, I think, the next day to Holland, because I was away again. And to be served up this game was just incredible. And every goal, you think it can't get any worse, and it somehow does. It's unbelievable. I mean, I was never the biggest fan of David Button when we did sign him, but yeah, this game will be making his highlight reel, obviously, probably not for the right reasons, but it was just shocking. And Northampton weren't great that day. They really weren't great. But again, it followed that same suit of the team we were playing, not playing well, and still absolutely killing us, because there was not really much quality that we put back. I can't really remember many chances that we actually had that game. Our one goal came from a goalkeeping mistake from Northampton.
Aziz had a big chance to get an equaliser to make it 2-2. He had a header, I think, if it was really late on, and then they broke away and got the third one. But what I'm also learning from this pod is that Lansley's never here. He's basically Holiday Lansley, isn't he, during the season?
I actually missed quite a lot of this first period, seemingly. I would like looking back on it.
I don't know why we got you on, really. That was a pretty big mistake.
I know, like the second half of the season, I've pretty much done every single game. But yeah, it was
late.
Leighton Orient
was next, and
that was
again. This is probably one of the worst moments of the season, I think, to be honest.
Is this the worst two games in succession, like, for big moments for a goalie in Reading history? We can't discuss this, but this is one for you, the listeners,
gotta decide.
Yeah,
gotta be. Because the 90th minute clanger from David Button in this game costs us another point. Mm-hmm. And the away end scenes after the full time, James, were not particularly pretty. Reading fans going at each other, going at the players. It just wasn't a nice place to be honest.
No, I've never seen an away end like that before. I mean, I was sat dead opposite the other end of the other side of the stadium, but I could feel the fumes coming out of people's ears from there. And it was the sort of, I think, one of the last few times, maybe Charlton a few weeks later, where Ruben did the standing in front of the away end thing. And it was just a barrage of abuse coming from the fans and the away end. And it was just sad to see what we'd come to. I mean, they were like caged animals in there, just wanting to, you know, punch anybody and anything, because there was just so much pent up frustration and anger. And I'm sure there were probably a few fists thrown in that away and at each other, I think, which is, you know, a sign of how bad it gets when you're fighting each other. I can just remember the walk down to pitch side for the interview, and you have to go right through the bows of the stadium, and there's a car park underneath the stand where the team coaches, and Ruben was stood there having like a conference with his other coaches, and I was just like, you know, maybe am I watching the moment where he just says he's had enough? Because the crestfallen look on his face and his coaches, they just didn't even know what to say to each other. I was like, you know, what am I watching here? you know, he came out and was questioned heavily about his decision to make everybody stand there, and he backed it and obviously did it for a few more weeks. But yeah, no, that was one of the worst. Followed by one of the best post away days, because I then just got absolutely blasted in London, which is always nice.
I think though, you said about Selez having, or like kind of nearly being at the end of his tether. I think that was the game where I think all fans were kind of at the end of their tether, though. I remember leaving that day, and that was one of the worst feelings I think I've had leaving an away game. I was not in a good place leaving that game, we'll say. It was a proper, I mean, you'd had fans in the away end fighting each other, people trying to break up fights, the standoff between the players and the managers. And when you look back on it, it was the youngest players that had stayed. All of kind of like the senior players had gone back inside, and it was literally your Matty Carsons, your Vickers, your Ia Bishamans that were stood there taking the pelters, and your Harley Deans.
Off your fuck, Harley Dean.
Oh yeah, that was the game you switched against him.
One thing I can remember from the end of this is that Harley Dean came over. People were really annoyed, obviously. And the one thing I can remember is him smirking, laughing and walking off. And I'd lost it by that point with Harley Dean. Just had no interest in ever watching him play for Reading again after that. He's not really played that many times since, but yeah, I was just done with it. And as you both said, the anger in the away end was just next level after that game. And it was difficult because I think, it was a game we didn't deserve to lose. Really, Leighton Orient were good, and they weren't convincing against us, but they were better than us maybe. But I'm not sure they deserved to beat us particularly. And then, you know, you basically just spoon one onto the floor in the 90th minute, and you're going to lose. It's just, as I said earlier on, like a lot of these games in this period, Reading were losing because they were finding ways to lose, not because the other teams were finding ways to beat them particularly.
That was the most frustrating thing about it. And also, Lansley did have a proper head loss after the Leighton Orient away completely. And also, Alex has kept that definite dislike for Harley Dean because he came on in a recent game against Cambridge United. I can tell you it didn't get a positive reaction from Mr. Everson.
Especially it was late on. He didn't even need to be on the field.
No. See, just mentioning it brings it back up. Yeah, no, I understand it. I'll be glad when he's gone.
We did have a one positive moment in this month, which was the Swindon game. It was a proper light relief, I've got to say, this Swindon game. It was actually really fun to be at, despite the fact there was only about, 6,000 or 7,000 people in the stadium. But it was really fun. That's the main thing. Mm. We ended up winning 5-0 against Swindon's under fours or something. And Reading kind of put the game to bed really late on with two goals in injury time. But Nibs got a hat trick, and I think this is really the first kind of like signs that Nibs actually could finish, Paul.
Yeah, definitely. And we all appreciate the Harley Dean goal later on as well. But yes, yeah. Harvey Nibs definitely came into form in that game. I think he scored a hat trick, didn't he? One of his ones was a penalty in the second half. Yeah, it was. I loved that game in many ways.
It felt like a throwback, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It felt like an 80s or 90s match. Any Pizza Cup match that gets a police helicopter above it, I think, is a result. I think that it's got something to be said that's positive about the atmosphere of that game. Because as much as we all don't want this all the time, some people say that, you know, scenes on TV we don't want to see during a match. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We want to see players lose their head and we want to see violence. Come on, let's be honest. As a football fan, it's what we want to see sometimes, isn't it? But
I'm there for the entertainment, and that's entertaining. So,
yeah, definitely. But as a fan and a reporter, James, you must have loved that evening as well.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was brilliant, especially as I was obviously in long before the trouble. Although as I left, there was still plenty of trouble. So it's kind of still going on around me. But no, just trying to interview Ruben and ask him about the importance of this game while having the police helicopter overhead, so I couldn't hear what his answers were on the recording. Kind of just summed up what kind of game it was. I don't think the police were prepared for the amount of on the day sales for tickets. I can remember being told that they were sort of disappointed with the turnout originally, and then suddenly it got to like a day before the game. It's like, oh my God, there's too many people here. How many police we're actually going to have?
I seem to remember TVP called it a low risk game, which was,
yeah, I don't think it was my sensible. Yeah, so yeah, it was fun. I mean, you know, we've had 10 years in the Championship of going, oh, you know, why can't we have the derbies? And suddenly, even though they're not in our league, we've got them all, you know, other than Aldershot, we've had, you know, Bristol Rovers has a bit of needle, you know, but obviously Swindon and Oxford in the same season. You know, the old Didcot Triangle was back this year, and I think we probably came out on top.
The absolutely notorious Didcot Triangle derby.
I have never heard that one before.
Never heard that?
The Didcot Triangle is definitely a thing. It was a thing.
Yeah.
The Didcot Triangle. No, fair enough. No, yeah. I respect that. But yeah, it's quite good. I like it. Yeah.
Had a little international break. Ready and raring to go after the international break. We all travelled into London for a fun day out at Charlton, like 2,600 fans, something like that. And at the Valley, Reading were okay, Paul, I think, for 50 minutes.
Yeah, then Harvey Nibs missed the header, and then it just all collapses around it. Nelson Abbey had one of his best matches. Even the Charlton fans were in love with him and suggesting that their club should sign him. Unfortunately, another bigger club comes in for him. They play in red and white, but it's not you. I just think that day was just really grim. That is one of the grimmest, because Charlton had to do so little again. It's a constant thing in that period of time. You didn't have to do much to beat us, and we just collapsed like a pack of cards, didn't we? It was miserable. We didn't hear the fourth goal. We weren't in the stadium. There was all kinds of issues getting out. That was not a good day. The London away days are just stressful. Unless you win, I can't remember the last time I saw us win in London. It's a bit grim, really.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think I've ever seen the fourth goal from this game.
That you've missed nothing. Same with me.
Not sure I've ever seen it. I think I saw the third, and then we left just before the fourth goal went in because it was 90th minute, and then ended up going for curry in London, which was much more enjoyable, to be honest.
The only thing I can remember it for is, again, getting absolutely blasted in London. But England also lost in the Rugby World Cup semi-final.
Can I just say this is a non-rugby zone?
It just added to the layer of depression from what
we don't normally edit stuff out on this podcast, but that reminds me.
Yeah, sorry, James, that's going on the cutting floor. You're done.
We had our fourth defeat in a row in the league 3 days later. Day after my birthday, Fleetwood at home. And I'll be honest, this one, there's a memory I have from this game is my brother turned up to this game. He had a baby about 4 or 5 months before, and he went, okay, this is my one, like, I've been allowed out, my one night out, like, in the evening, I've been allowed out to, you know, where I don't have to look after the baby. Comes to the football, and I remember him saying it that as we conceded the second goal, and he just went, this was such a waste of my time. I could have been sat at home. And I think you said, Paul, that this was the worst performance of the season, this Fleetwood game.
Yeah, and I stick by that because we were absolutely outplayed by Fleetwood in that first half, and it could have been 3 or 4 nil. I mean, it sounds dramatic, but I don't think it's unfair. And that was actually the only time I've been with Charlotte this season. She's going again on Saturday. So that will, you know, who knows what happened there. But wow, that was so, so poor. And yeah, it was our guy at the end as well, Harley Dean, who got caught out completely for the winning goal for Fleetwood. It was, you know, totally deserved to be dropped. And that was so miserable.
Must admit, though, that one is one of those ones that borders on sort of so bad it's funny. Like, I was sat there after the game thinking, we've just lost to Fleetwood Town with like 50 fans in the away end. Like, one behind each other. It was like one line just from the top to the bottom of the stand of Fleetwood fans.
And I was just thinking, the lowest home attendance as well.
Yeah, less than 10,000. It went down as 9,400, but there weren't that many in the stand in the game.
I'm surprised that there was 94 by the 94th minute, to be honest, because Don
Ballard scored as well, didn't
he?
Yeah.
And it was another game where we conceded in the 90th minute to lose again. So that was
Lee Johnson running down the touchline to celebrate with the busload of Fleetwood fans that travelled down. And I was just
the worst combination ever, isn't it?
I sat there and I laughed to myself, like, this is what we've come to now.
I totally said how far Lee Johnson was their manager.
Yeah.
That's astonishing.
That was the third time we've lost in the last minute of the season, and we are still only in October. So better times to come, I'm sure. Maybe. Although I think we've still got at least 3 more of those to discuss in these season reviews yet. So not looking forward to those. Defeat number 5. Reading 2, Portsmouth 3. And the sell before we die march before the game, James, happened. 1,500, 2,000 people, something like that, were there. And Reading put on a performance for the first half in this game.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that they put on a performance, really, was because Selez finally just went, you know what? Screw it, I'm done. I'm done with 4-2-2-2. Let's just do something different. And he went to 4-2-3-1 for the first proper time this season.
Yeah, and it was Smith's first start, I think, from memory. No, he started at Charlton, but it was where he was sort of properly fit. That March, proudest moment of my time supporting Reading, seeing that many fans out to make the effort. Even some people I know that came to the March didn't even go to the game. They got to the stadium and went home, but they felt like they had to be there. It was very much one of those I was there moments that will sort of stick forever until the day I die. And I thought that was going to carry on into the game. You know, we went 2-0 up, played really well. Smith missed an open goal from the halfway line, and it kind of switched from there. You know, they equalised by half time, and I never felt we were going to get anything from the game after that. It was a matter of when they were going to score the third goal. That confidence sort of that our team would turn around. It wasn't where it is now. I still thought we were a bit shaky. And yeah, it was disappointing to lose the game. But I can remember walking away from that thinking, you know what, I've had a good day out. You know, obviously the march was good. We've shown more in that first half than we'd shown in all of the games combined for the last month or so. And I thought, you know what, things aren't going to get, you know, if we put that kind of performance in, then we'll be all right this season. So yeah, you know, it was another defeat, but I definitely felt that was maybe a bend, not quite a corner, but we were beginning to bend a little bit.
I agree. It definitely looked better. Considering the opposition that we were playing against as well, we kind of, and then in the second half, it wouldn't have been unfair, I think, if we would have got a draw from that game. I think we had enough chances, especially when Ben Elliott came on. I think he had a big impact in that game, centrally. You felt like there was something there, but you wanted that backed up in the next few matches. And that didn't happen, did it, immediately, Alex, at all?
No, Bristol Rovers, we continued with the same formation against Bristol Rovers, and we didn't necessarily play very well. I think it was kind of like back to what we'd seen against Fleetwood the week before, 1-1 draw. I don't think it was terrible against Bristol Rovers again. And I feel like I've said that a few times. I don't think we were awful, actually, in many of these games, but it was just another game where we just couldn't find a winner. And there just didn't seem to be a way through, really.
You say we weren't awful that day. We had an XG of 0.25.
My point being, it didn't ever look like we were going to lose the game against Bristol Rovers, though. It's similar to the Fleetwood game. We played really poorly and then we lost. They scored at like a freak, really long range effort to score. And of course, Chris Martin scored in that game as well against us, which was inevitable.
Biggest thing, though, was the Smith goal, right? Having Smith coming back and now scoring, because I think
that was his first goal, wasn't it?
That was his first goal that day. And I think Kelvin, you know, had come in, everyone was excited about him. You know, we were praising him, but had fizzled out and no one really had kind of taken that striker spot. And obviously Smith was out for so long. What was it, James? I think you said it was Charlton. He was first back. And then his first start was it Portsmouth? I think his first start. And you started to have a bit of hope and you started to see, I guess, the change of the way that we were playing. Smith was leading the press a lot better at that point as well. But it was just that hope of that we've got someone up front who's a proven goal scorer at that point as well. That I think, I guess you could say we were clamoring for any sort of hope at that stage because things were getting very, very bleak. But I think it was a big moment that having Smith and his first goal there.
And then came the best game of the season. Come on, Alex. You can.
I didn't want to introduce it, but yeah. Reading 2, Shrewsbury 3.
Away from lowest low.
Let's not get it lands at Yonis. We should have won both these games, theory.
I'm sorry. I agree with Lansley. We should have beaten Shrewsbury. We weren't bad against Shrewsbury. In fact,
I agree.
We were good against Shrewsbury. Mm-hmm. Anybody who watched that game, I think, would agree. In the first half, we were miles best. Shrewsbury are one of the worst teams that we've played all season. They were terrible. Terrible for the first half. And we went 2-0 up so quickly. I think it's 15 minutes or something. Harvey Nibbs makes a really, really dumb error for them to score their first goal. But even then, after that, the entirety of the second half, nothing ever happened in that second half. It was very similar to the Burton game, actually, at the weekend. Nothing happened the entirety of the second half. And then we get to injury time and it just, like, collapsed completely. Hutchinson loses his man at a corner. And Che Dunkley scores from a header. And then they score from a recycled throw-in about a minute later for the winner. And you're just sitting... I was sat there in the way, and it's just like, if you can't win from 2-0 up away from home against what was the lowest scoring team in the league, are you ever going to win away from home?
I had already consigned myself at that time to never seeing Reading win away from home ever again following that game. because as you said, there was just nothing to lose that game. There was no reason to have lost it. You know, I still sit here now, and if you replay that game 100 times, we win 100 times. I think that was just the one in a million time that we don't win it, and it was just. God, that's the most depressing thing I've ever been leaving a ground. You know, forget the Northampton or the Orient games or whatever. That was just like, Jesus, we might not even come second from bottom here. We're going to come bottom of League One again and go down to League Two. I was fully signed up to the League Two HMS Pisser League following season by that point, and that was only November.
Is this the game that will always be remembered by Reading fans, this one game from this season?
This will be the hallmark of you're not a real fan because you weren't there when we conceded twice in stoppage time to lose at Shrewsbury. Therefore, only the 1,000 and, you know, 1,100 fans that were there can ever class themselves as real fans.
I'd love to. It's the reverse of Robin Friday for many years before.
I'd love to think how many Shrewsbury fans had left before the equaliser went in. There must have been a few.
There's only 6,000 there at the beginning, apparently. So there can't have been any more than about 4,000 left by the end.
Every single game, though, in this run, I think you leave it, and especially in that month, that month of October then went into November, you left it and you thought, it can't get any worse than Northampton away, and then Leighton Orient happens. Then it can't get any worse than Leighton Orient away and Charlton happens, and then Fleetwood happens. Portsmouth may be the bump in the road because it was Portsmouth, but then Shrewsbury happens after, and you just, every single time, it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I remember leaving that game. And I mean, I wasn't too well at that point, but that was probably one of the quietest journeys home Alex and I think ever had on a journey back.
Don't think we discussed the football for about an hour and a half after that. We sat in the car. I remember sitting in the car park afterwards. We didn't leave the car park for about 45 minutes. We just sat there, basically just didn't want to do anything, didn't want to go home, didn't want to move, didn't want to do anything.
I ended up in a nightclub in Shrewsbury with a player that came off the bench for Shrewsbury that night. That's how my night ended. And another night, it was a common theme running here where I got battered after a game.
Your liver must have taken out pounding this season.
I feel like the message here, James, is perhaps if you get up drinking, Reading will start winning.
No, because I've still been out drinking.
Whoa, did you see the panic there?
But yeah, that was pretty surreal. Like the only nightclub in Shrewsbury, it had like a disco floor, like a pop world, but it wasn't a pop world. And like a Shrewsbury striker just came bounding over. And I was like, this is not how I had my night, how my weekend planned before the game, and definitely not how I had my night ending when I, turned up to work this morning.
Well, at that point, we were not quite rock bottom, but that really was thanks to Cheltenham, just not actually knowing how to score any goals whatsoever, because we sat 23rd in the league on 7 points after the first 16 games, 10 points from safety. And I think, as James said, people had resigned themselves, Paul, to League Two football. And yeah. I think actually at that point, people would almost resign themselves to, if we get relegated, maybe there is just not a Reading FC next season.
Yeah. I don't feel that dramatic at all, because that's how we felt, wasn't it? It was so, so bad. It got to the point when we were going to games and thinking, oh, we've had a good day out, but now we're just going to be miserable because we're going to watch Reading. That's it. It was so dire. And you got to discuss how people felt about Ruben Sellers at that point, because I remember thinking that if we weren't so badly run, he would have been sacked. I didn't think that necessarily he was a bad guy or anything, but he was in a really bad situation. You can't pretend you didn't think that.
And we can't, sorry, Paul, just saying, we can't forget the best post-match interview any player has ever done in his life.
I was going to come on to that. You're right. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that as well, James, because Hutchinson afterwards said, basically implied that basically there was one player, one thing that should be changed at the club. And he's basically saying, Ruben should be changed. And it turns out what was the correct thing to actually change was take Hutchinson out of the team. So there's a certain amount of irony to that, isn't there, Jones?
Yeah. He also said a lot about the young players, which I think alienated a lot of, well, the dressing room for a start, and the fan base, because obviously in an ideal world, yes, we wouldn't be playing 18-year-olds that are playing their first year of football. But, you know, I don't think any of, I know that we were losing games, but none of us, I don't think at any point, were questioning that they were trying, or that the vast majority of them were trying. We were just coming up short. But yeah, I can just remember being stood next to Tim, and obviously Tim had to put his questions out, and just my jaw dropping at like, what the hell is Sam Hutchinson saying here? I remember
listening to that with Alex in wherever we were in Birmingham, having some dinner whilst the car was charging, and it was just bemusement listening to it. Like you say,
the journalist in me was going, "That's a cracking headline," or "That's a cracking line." You know, that's going to get me good views. Mm. But then I was like, that's not going to go down very well for him.
I remember his interview being quite divisive, in all honesty, because I remember some people coming out and saying, actually, that's exactly what we want to hear from players. And we want people to, like, we want them to be honest. We want them to be, you know, correct. Like, you know, we want them to say what they're feeling.
But attacking the young players, Alex, went down really badly.
It wasn't really the right move, in all honesty. You're only ever going to alienate yourself doing that as well, because ultimately you're one person. And yes, in a normal situation, I think Paul's right. Ruben Sellers is probably going to have been moved on at that point. You know, you're second bottom of the table, you're 10 points off safety. There's not really a route back out of it. But, you know, I think if you're a player, you've kind of got to realise that you're not in a normal situation at that point. And that perhaps, like, speaking out against the manager maybe isn't the most sensible move. And, I mean, ultimately, you know, it's kind of borne out in the fact that Sam Hutchinson's never played for Reading again and won't ever play for Reading again, because he's going to get released at the end of the season. I think the official line is he's been injured since then, but let's be honest, it wouldn't surprise anybody if he's just kind of been told, just don't bother, you're not getting in the squad anymore, we don't want you here. And yeah, I just think it's one of those situations where surely it would just make sense to kind of keep your mouth shut a bit. I just don't understand what the logic was there from him at all. And I remember after the game thinking about Sellers, and I think I've said it a couple of times on this podcast, where I thought we were unlucky to lose games. And I look back and I don't think we ever played, like, there's a couple of games, yes, we did play horrendously. Blackpool away, that sticks out to me. Fleetwood at home, we were awful. And a number of games we played badly, but I feel like we were quite unfortunate in a number of games, and we probably deserved more than the 7 points that we were sat on. Obviously, we, you know, started on -4, so we won 11 points. I think we probably deserved more than the 11 points we'd actually won as well, James.
Yeah, I can. It was fine margins mixed with the occasional big hammering, which kind of kept us pretty doom and gloom. But if you take the sort of performances, sort of in general, I don't think we're that bad. I mean, you know, to be fair, so much has happened now. I can't even think back to last month. Never mind all the way back to, you know, October and September. You know, it was obviously mainly being consigned to League Two and relegation, and, you know, but at the time, I guess in a really weird way, the kind of off-field mess was taking my mind off maybe just how bad things were on the pitch as well, especially sort of having to find it out and report it and sort of be in the middle of it. It was very much sort of, okay, well, the games are just a 90-minute rest of, okay, nothing's going to come out now because they're playing the game, so let's just kind of watch this. But the minute the game finishes, you're back thinking, oh, God, what's going to come out? You know, who's going to get points docked this time? You know, who's going to be made redundant now, and who's not going to get paid? And, you know, the games are almost irrelevant at this point. I think we were right in the eye of the battle of making sure the club even survived. So, yeah, the games were depressing, but I don't think we were. I think we were depressed so much that another defeat wasn't going to really kind of take off much of a difference. So it's just kind of a bit more misery to pile on.
But yeah, it was just hideous, though, being a fan of a club and, like you say, just contemplating the future of the football club at that point. because Shrewsbury away, like you say, I think a lot of people were resigned to League Two at that point, and you thought, is there going to be a club next year? We hadn't hit the depths, though, of kind of the ownership struggles and kind of the off-the-field issues, though, then, which, looking back on it, seems crazy, because the amount of times I think I've sat there and thought, fuck, I'm going to have nothing to do on Saturdays. There's going to be no Reading FC next year, was crazy looking back on it. Because I think Shrewsbury away was probably, I think, the first time I thought there's not going to be a football club there next year. Which is then mad to think, as we'll come on to in, you know, part two of this, how many more times and how much worse it got at different moments for different reasons. It's just crazy looking back on it.
Truly bleak, but there are bad times coming. There is, I can assure you. Thank goodness for that, because if this was just continuously like this, Alex, it would be too much, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if you've managed to suffer through 70 minutes of this podcast, you've done really well, because it was miserable. I'll be honest, it just was crap. The whole time, it was crap supporting the club at that point. It's just, as Paul said, if you were to go through and have a pick a six-week period of like when you just really didn't want to be supporting the club, the start of October through to that Shrewsbury game would have been it was just absolutely dire. Every week was just bad going to games. And obviously, as you say, James, combine it with the off-the-field stuff, and it almost felt that the games weren't even meaning anything at that point. So, yeah, that's not a fun place to end stuff on. But I will say, at least we've managed to end this one, because the part two of this season review is much more positive, because...
Yeah, the spoiler is it does get better, so stick around.
If you've, you know, been living under a rock for the last year, spoiler, it is actually not as depressing as this episode. So, yeah, join us for part two, when we'll be discussing the remainder of the on-the-field stuff from this season, from our glorious first away win at Wickham, right through to the game against Blackpool at the end of the season. And then join us for part three, when we'll be discussing the off-the-field issues, protests, etc., which have been plaguing the club all season. If you've enjoyed this episode, thank you. Do join us on the next one and episode three.
You're quite frankly sick. That's
what it is. It is a bit weird to have enjoyed it, but maybe if you've like put up with it, if you've listened to it.
Found solace.
Appreciate solace. The efforts. Yeah.
There you go. Something, if you've managed to get to the end of the episode, do drop us 5 stars though on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate it. Come back for episode two, because it will be much more positive. Promise. And then join us for episode three, when we'll be looking back at the off-the-field stuff. Until then, up the ding.